Well, thank you, John, for that very generous introduction. And I thank the organisers very much for remembering that I'm still around and not totally retired yet. Thank you for inviting me to the conference. So on a global perspective, antiretroviral therapy has made an enormous difference to people with HIV infection. But opportunistic infections and co-infections still remain a problem, especially in resource-limited areas of the world. And that is no more so than in the case of immune reconstitution inflammatory syndromes, where after starting antiretroviral therapy, aberrant immune responses against pathogens can lead to disease, which is now called IRIS. And as shown in this slide here, there are many pathogens that can be associated with an IRIS when antiretroviral therapy is started. Mycobacteria, as you can see from the top here, and Cryptococcus are particularly difficult pathogens in this scenario. I wasn't going to talk much about cryptococcosis because Christina was going to do that. I've included one or two slides on her work, but unfortunately, a lot of the work on CRS will not be covered. I'm basically going to use mycobacterial IRIS as the model disease to discuss what causes this problem with you today. Now, this is a model that we put forward for IRIS, or immune restoration disease, as we called it back in those days in the early 2000s. And what I want to show you is that what we prophesied back then is still true these days, and that is that this is mainly a problem of patients with very low CD4 T-cell counts, less than 50 and probably less than 100 as well. But the main factors really in causing the disease is a high pathogen load before antiretroviral therapy is started and immune dysregulation during the first few months of antiretroviral therapy. And those are the issues that we need to be addressing when we think about prevention and treatment of these problems. The significance of IRIS worldwide is amply demonstrated by this publication here, which is currently in press in Clinical Infectious Diseases. This paper reports the findings of a study that has been conducted over the last 13 years, and I had the privilege of being one of the investigators in the study and chair of the Clinical Endpoint Review Committee. This was a study that was run out of the NIAID in Washington. And the main findings of this study were that this study was undertaken in over 500 patients with HIV who are commencing antiretroviral therapy with CD4 counts of less than 100, very immunodeficient people. It was conducted in the USA, in Kenya, and in Thailand, and the main findings were that about 20% of patients in this group, very immune deficient patients, developed IRIS during the first 6 months of therapy. And importantly, there were similar rates in every country. USA was the same as Kenya, was the same as Thailand. 6.5% of patients in the study died during this period. And here there was a difference. In the USA, it was only 1.5 to 2%. In Kenya, it was near the 10% that people are reporting for early mortality after starting antiretroviral therapy in some resource-limited settings. IRIS was strongly associated with an increased risk of death with a hazard ratio of over 3. Importantly, from the point of view of an immunologist and someone who studied this disease for many years, IRIS was not associated with the CD4 T-cell count increase after antiretroviral therapy. What it was associated with was a low hemoglobin level, which predicted IRIS, and high plasma levels of CRP and D-dimers, which predicted death. And I'll explain to you why this is during the talk. The relationship between the CD4 T cell count rise and the viral load drop after starting antiretrovirals and IRS has always been a bit conjectural. It's very clear from retrospective studies and now from prospective studies that those factors associated with the development of an IRS are very severe CD4 T cell lymphopenia when therapy is started, disseminated infection, and early initiation of antiretroviral therapy. I think, although it was unclear from observational studies, prospective studies suggest or indicate that it's not related to the rise in total CD4 T cells. Also, the evidence that it's related to the drop in viral load, the rate of drop of viral load, is not that strong from prospective studies. Although there's still some uncertainty, there are still some investigators that suggest that a rapid decline in viral load after starting integrase inhibitors is a risk factor for IRS. But we can talk about this in the discussion at the end, but I don't think this will be so. The data that starting antiretroviral therapy early after diagnosis of an opportunistic infection and that is a risk factor for IRS is really well demonstrated for studies on TB, HIV co-infection, mainly undertaken in South Africa. And maybe Kogi will refer to some of these. But as you can see from the slide here, that those patients who started antiretroviral therapy early as opposed to late had a 2 to 3-fold increase in the rate of TB IRS after starting treatment. However, on the other hand, those people who started antiretroviral therapy early had improved survival in every study this was shown. They had much better improved survival than those who started antiretroviral therapy later. So you trade off development of IRS against a better survival benefit of early treatment. However, an exception to this rule is those patients who have central nervous system opportunistic infections. And for TB IRS, for example, this study here undertaken in Cape Town showed that of patients with paradoxical TB IRS, 12% developed CNS disease, and of those, 81% were admitted to hospital, 91% required steroid therapy, up to 30%, and probably 30% because of the loss to follow-up, died, and 37.5% of patients had a neurological disability at 3 months. And this is also very true of cryptococcal meningitis IRS, which I'm not going to talk about, but that is a severe risk factor for development of IRS if you start antiretroviral therapy early. It's also true for PML IRS. So in this publication here, which summarized all the data on IRS, PML IRS published up until 2017, they found that the paradoxical form occurred in people who are again very immune deficient and that there was death in 28% of cases. And corticosteroids sometimes reversed it, but often didn't, and there's no clear signal that you can reverse the process with corticosteroid therapy. So because of the high rates of hospitalization, despite better survival for TB IRS, et cetera, and the problems with managing opportunistic infections in the central nervous system, we really need to still understand a lot more about what's going on. Here, I focused very much on mycobacterial IRS and the pathogenesis of it. And there have been numerous papers written on this, some of which we've contributed. And to summarize, what we now think is happening in this problem is that prior to starting antiretroviral therapy, patients exhibit activation of monocytes and macrophages and neutrophils. There's activation of inflammasomes in monocytes, and I'll show you something more about this, and increased production of pro-inflammatory cytokines, particularly interleukin-6, tumor necrosis factor, interferon gamma, and IL-18. It's also very clear now that although the total CD4 T-cell count doesn't seem to correlate with the onset of disease, what does is an expansion of antigen-specific CD4 T-cells. In the context of TB iris, these are antigen-specific effector memory T-cells with a Th1 phenotype. So that's a phenotype where the cells produce a lot of interferon gamma that leads to macrophage activation. There's also impaired recovery of naive T cells, which may explain why there's no a relationship with the total CD4 T cell count. The study undertaken by the NIAID that I mentioned right at the beginning of my talk has looked at various biomarkers in plasma that can predict the development of an iris, and this data is in preparation for publication at the moment. Interestingly, what was found was that the strongest markers that predicted an iris were markers of macrophage activation like soluble CD14, TNF-D dimer. But in addition, there was one cytokine that was particularly predictive of disease, and that's a cytokine called IL-27. So being ID physicians, you might say, what's IL-27? As an immunologist, I've had that all the time from ID physicians. But IL-27 is an interesting cytokine because it's a promoter of Th1 T cells, a particular promoter of Th1 T cells. And this made me think, well, there's another cytokine that promotes Th1 T cells in particular, and that's interleukin-18. And these are data from a study that I was, again, privileged to help supervise with Suzanne Crowe in Kuala Lumpur. These are data produced by Hongyan Tan. And Hongyan showed that this cytokine, IL-18, also strongly predicted the development of TB iris. You can see a receiver-operator curve there. It was a very strong predictor. Now, IL-18 is a cytokine that is produced when monocytes are activated, and other cells, but particularly monocytes, through a pathway called inflammasomes. And it's a very inflammatory form of programmed cell death. You can see here that IL-18 is produced when the enzyme caspase-1 is activated. Hongyan also showed that if you looked at the amount of caspase-1 in monocytes in the blood of patients with HIV and TB, you can see that before antiretroviral therapy, patients with HIV and TB had higher proportions of monocytes expressing caspase-1, and that during iris, the amount of expression of caspase-1 was much higher just in the TB iris patients. So I think here we've got evidence that IL-18 is also involved. And the interesting about this is that IL-18 is also a strong promoter of Th1 CD4 T cell differentiation. So what does this all mean? Well, I've put together this model of what I think is happening in TB iris anyway, and probably several other types of iris. And what I think is happening is that before, on the left side of the slide, before antiretroviral therapy, in the context of very low CD4 T cells, we have activated monocytes, macrophages, neutrophils, maybe other cells that are producing some cytokines, including IL-18 and 27, and they're trying to compensate for the lack of CD4 T cells. When we throw in antiretroviral therapy and the number of CD4 T cells rapidly increases, those T cells are differentiating in a milieu of cytokines that drives them towards Th1. And you can see this here, that the CD4 T cells are increasing. They're influenced by these cytokines that drives them towards Th1, which produce interferon gamma And that activates monocytes and macrophages even more. So you've got this vicious circle going on. It's probably also some activation of neutrophils by tumor necrosis factor. Now, this model I find particularly helpful because it explains a lot of the clinical observations that I've made over the 25, 30 years of my career that I've been thinking about this problem. So when we first described this problem in patients starting zidovudine monotherapy back in the late 1980s, what we found was that the patients who were getting MAC disease had strong restoration of tuberculin skin test responses. This is a classical Th1 response. Also, with conditions like BCG iris, but also TB iris, you may also see necrotizing granulomatous inflammation. Here, lymphadenitis in a baby from Indonesia that was vaccinated with BCG, had unknown HIV, and when it was discovered, it was put onto antiretrovirals and got this problem. But also you can see, and Graham Menzies has emphasized this to me many times, that many patients with TBIRS also get a lot of suppuration of tissues, a lot of pus formation and suppuration. And this may be accounted for perhaps by the activation of neutrophils that we see according to my model there. So, also, I might mention just a little bit of Christina's work because she's not here today. But what Christina, she set up this study in Durban. It resulted in 11 publications, and 7 of them were on the immunopathogenesis. And basically, what she showed was that pre-antiretroviral therapy, there's a persistence of cryptococcal infection in the CSF, high pathogen load. There are lower CD4 T cell counts and CD4 T cell dysfunction, immune dysregulation leading to a higher pathogen load. There were lower cryptococcus specific T cell and antibody responses before antiretroviral therapy, and higher monocyte and neutrophil activation and chemokines related to those. After antiretroviral therapy in the first 3 months, there's particularly a molecular signature of innate immune responses, including inflammasome activation, presumably in monocytes. And later on, at 6 months, molecular signature changes more to one involving T cells and B cells. So I suspect that something very similar is also going on in cryptococcal iris. One particularly interesting piece of data came from Hyuna Yun from Lisanne Perovsky's group in New York, where they assayed plasma antibody levels to cryptococcus for us. And what was shown was that those patients who went on to develop cryptococcal iris had much lower antibody levels to laminarin and glucuronosilomannan. So again, this reinforces this idea that immune deficiency and a higher pathogen load before you start antiretroviral therapy is a risk factor. How can we predict the patients who are going to get this problem? Well, pathogen load and the presence of the pathogen is important, as I say. And I think anyone late presenters presenting with a CD4 count of under 100 should be screened for cryptococcal infection with a cryptococcal antigen, and probably also for MTB infection using a LAM assay. We can also look for markers of immune dysregulation, and there's a lot of data showing that D-dimers, soluble CD14, IL-6, CRP, and a low HB are predictors of that inflammation and immune dysregulation before we start antiretroviral therapy. And here's data here from a study that's in press in AIDS, and what this study basically showed in patients from South Africa and Uganda, that if you look at soluble CD14, IL-6, and D-dimers before antiretroviral therapy, they strongly predict a high rate of more early mortality after antiretroviral therapy. And they did this independently of CD4 T-cell counts and viral load. Can we do anything about these problems pre-ART? Well, Graham Menti's data from Cape Town suggests that if we give patients with TB and HIV prophylactic corticosteroid therapy when we start antiretrovirals, we can reduce, these are the data from reality studies, this study showed that if you give prophylactic antimicrobials, you can reduce rates of early mortality. And Graham's data showed that if you give corticosteroid therapy, you can reduce rates of TBIRS after starting antiretroviral therapy. So you're addressing the two issues that I referred to in one of my first slides, the high pathogen load and the immune dysregulation by giving antimicrobial therapy and corticosteroids when you start ART. So in summary, I hope I've shown you today is that IRIS causes substantial morbidity and mortality in HIV patients who commence antiretroviral therapy with CD4 T cells counts of less than 100. A higher risk of IRIS is related to activation of innate immune responses. In the case of TB IRIS and cryptococcal IRIS, it's probably monocytes and macrophages and neutrophils. This is present pre-ART, and this seems to be more important than the changes that are occurring after ART, such as CD4 T cell count increases and viral load declines. In TB IRIS, monocyte macrophage activation likely drives an expansion of TB-specific Th1 CD4 T cells and the activation of neutrophils. And before ART, a low hemoglobin level, high CRP and D-dimers indicate a high risk of IRIS and or death after starting antiretroviral therapy. Prophylactic corticosteroid therapy decreases the risk of paradoxical TB IRIS. And in finishing, I'd like to thank all the people that have helped me with these studies over many years and also facilitated me being able to do these studies around the world. And thank you very much for doing that. Thank you.